Okay, I sort of would like to kind of go back and talk about what your own expectations were for yourself before the war, what you had kind of thought about what you'd be doing in your life and what kind of things you had planned on doing.
Well, I guess in the beginning when I, even I finished high school, I had these dreams like everybody else, you know. Used to be a lady on a reservation. She was a, what they call educational, well, homemaker, I guess you'd call it nowadays. But mm-hmm. She went around to on a reservation to all the homes, you know, and she helped the mothers, you know, gave them suggestions on how to sew clothes for their kids or how to can vegetables out their garden. You know. And then she helped them a lot, you know, because like she'd come to a house and they'd have some problem, like they needed screens on their windows or something. Well, she'd go back up there to the agency office and she would recommend that they put, so they'd send out, you know, a whole bunch of screens for their windows and their screen door and all that, you know. And some houses would have, you know, windows that were broke, you know, and she'd find somebody to get them fixed for them. So everybody liked her, you know. And I always remember her, Miss Newell. She started up the 4-H club then for the girls. Mm-hmm. The boys had 4-H club. It didn't include the girls. So when she came, she started the girls. So they sort of combined us, you know. And we each got a little calf to raise and enter mm-hmm. the state fair. So we were kept pretty busy. And then she had sewing club for the girls too. We each got to make ourselves a dress, which was entering the contest. And so I thought, you know, this must be really a neat job. And she got to drive a government car, so she didn't have to worry about repairs.
Oh, or yeah.
A gas or nothing, you know, because it had the USIS license plates on it. So, I always thought, you know, this would be something I can do, and then I can come home and be on my reservation with my people. So the more I thought about it, I thought it would be a good idea. So when I graduated from high school, they offered scholarships, and my mom had wanted, she was sort of pushing me to nursing, you know. I told her, you know, I'd think about it, but that wasn't really what I wanted. So I went over there and asked what I could take, you know. And, well, they told me that the type of thing that I would be doing was, that they call it home extension work, and I would have to major in home economics. So I said, okay, so I took the examinations and everything, and I got the scholarship, so I left with that year after I graduated from high school. Then I went up to Brookings, South Dakota State College, University. So I went through this process, and I took chemistry, biology, biology, zoology, physiology, and all of that. Well, the first year I did pretty good. At the second year, I got kind of, I thought, oh, what am I doing here, you know? Why am I taking all these things? And, you know, I started wondering, you know, what, because I don't think it was what I really wanted, you know. Mm-hmm. And by this time, see, I had been, like, I had been around, like, I worked at these summer resorts, and I got to see other parts of the country, and so I think about that time, what I had in mind was that I just wanted to go, just travel and see mm-hmm. places.
And not go back and work at the reservation. So.
Well, I thought there's plenty of time for that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And I wanted to see everything I could see before I settled down. That was mm-hmm. I think the idea that came into my mind at that time. And then to top it off, see that that was that December when Pearl Harbor. Well, before that, see that voice, the Lavlimer, I heard in listening to the service going on to June. And everybody seemed to have war on their mind, you know. And then one of the kids at the college said, you know, he says, why should I graduate, you know? He says, what for? He said, to become canon father. He said, you know, and I thought, what's he talking about? And then I realized that the minute they graduated, they had to sign up for the service, you know. Yeah. You have to get that classification, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about it, and it seemed like every week somebody was leaving, and people were just kind of, you know, just going, nobody seemed to know what they were doing.
Hmm.
And so that's when I went down to Kansas. I went back down there because that's where I graduated from down there. So when I got back down there, well, I knew the superintendent at the school. He told me I could work up there, you know, and if I wanted to, I could go up to the Kansas University there. So I thought it was a good idea, so I went up there. Well, this time I took an art major, and I started out. I think I was there about 4 months. It seemed like everybody was leaving school, you know. Everybody, mm-hmm. And I'd get acquainted with or something.
Well, were they going in the military as well as work?
And let me in say, a war work, yeah.
Yeah.
And it seemed like everybody was, you know, they said, oh, you know, heck with school, you know, we can make some money, you know, without. And that was the attitude, I guess. You know?
Uh-huh.
So a couple of my friends, well, we had an apartment there in town, and they were working out there.
Not in California?
No, they were working at the Sunflower Ordnance. It was one of the biggest munition plants that was in Kansas.
Oh.
It's right out of, it was right out of Lawrence, about 30 miles or just.
Hmm.
They used to ride a bus back and forth. But they were working over there, and now, Miss Esther told me that a lot of the kids from the Indian school were out there working. She said, oh, she said, they'll give you a job just like that. She said, oh, you make good money, she said.
Mm.
So every week, you know, they'd have a big paycheck. And me, I was working at this, because I was taking that art course, but I worked part-time at this Weaver's department store. It was the biggest department store in Lawrence, you know. And I thought I was really doing good, because at that time there was a lot of, you know, that division between the blacks and the whites. In the whole town of Lawrence, they used to have what they call East Bottoms, and that was the black neighborhood.
Hmm.
And they never came up across the river there, you know. They just sort of stayed in their own place.
Hmm.
And the only time they came up there was for work, you know, like women who worked in the homes or something. And they had 3 theaters, and I remember two of them were real big, and then they had 2 small ones. Those 2 big ones didn't allow them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 2 small ones let them go, but they had a special place for them. Like this one they call a Jayhawk Theater. It had 3, it had 2 balconies. And see, the top balcony was just for the blacks. So they used to call it Nigger Heaven. And this big department store, Weaver's, they didn't allow the blacks to come in there and shop. Mm-hmm. And it was the biggest, they catered to the university crowd.
What did you think about that? You know,
it gives you a feeling of, it's a funny feeling, but that you don't belong nowhere, like you're not even there.
Mm-hmm.
Because here you are in the middle, and here's the white society, and this one is the blacks, and you're right here, and nobody's paying attention to you, you know. So you don't know
which way you are.
Yeah, and I didn't know any black people, so I couldn't. So it was kind of a funny life there, but. So Somebody told me I was lucky because they hired me there at the department store as well. You know, to decorate the windows, you know. Because I did a whole layout, and there was this guy from Chicago, I think he liked it. He offered me a job. But then I really didn't want to go to Chicago, so I told him that as soon as I finished school, I would, you know, get in touch with him or something, you know. But that was about it. But that Weaver's department store, they thought my work was just, you know, good, so they had me there. And everybody said, gee, you're lucky to get in there because they're really prejudiced and all that.
Hmm.
But I never came up against, maybe in a subtle way they were, but I didn't notice that, you know, because I just did my work and I only talked to people that I had to talk to. And there were several ladies, and it was funny because they were the elderly women that worked there. They worked in the back there, like a shipping clerk and all that. But I remember they were real good to me. And they were always, you know, bringing something for lunch, and they would want me to share it, you know. Because I used to be a little skinny girl, and I guess they thought I didn't have enough to eat or something.
So you kind of thought maybe this you'd stay in art?
Well, I was, you know, art has always been a natural thing with me. And like everybody tells me, you know, gee, why didn't you, you know, go on with your art? Maybe it could have been famous now, but I've never thought about that. But I think, to me, art is just something that is like a hobby. And what I make is my own, I do it to satisfy my own creation. And like the other day, my daughter was telling me that, because I made one of my little granddaughters a dress for Easter, you know. She said she wore it to a school, so she goes to this little preschool place. And one of the ladies asked her, you know, where she got the dress, so my daughter told her grandma made it, you know. Oh, she says, ask her how much she'll charge, she said, to make me, my little girl one, you know. So my daughter said, well, I don't know, she. So she says, why don't you, Mom? She said, and, you know, she said, charge her about $5, she said, because it doesn't take that much material. I said, where would I find time, you know?
So you sort of contemplated fashion design, and then...
Oh, that was what I really went into, was fashion designing. Oh, I used to look at all these magazines, you know, I was really into that, you know. And I don't know, somehow now I think about it, it all seems so silly.
Did your expectations change after being in the war, after going into the war?
I guess it did, because the funny part of it was, see, I always thought, like a lot of my friends, you know, got married, you know, and they would write to me while in my traveling and stuff like that. I would look them up or go visit them. Here they would, you know, be married and maybe had a baby or two, you know, and it seemed like they were always trying to show me how happy they were, and this was a thing, and that, you know, that I was supposed to envy them, because, you know, here I was, poor Chris, she was all by herself, you know. And I used to think, you know, I don't know, I'm just as happy as they are by myself, you know. And so what, you know, what's the big deal about? And I used to tell myself that I didn't care for housework, and I couldn't be bothered with children. Well, even my sisters, you know, they used to say that, sure, I love my nieces and nephews, and you know, one of my sisters had a baby when I went home. This was when I was in the service. I went home on a furlough, and she had to have a new baby. So I picked her up, you know, and I held her, and then she was kind of wet, so I said, we'll take her back. And picture her with children. She just didn't have that knack with kids. And now she laughs about it. She said, and here she ended up with 7 children. So that was my,
So you sort of felt that way about yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I always thought, you know, I'm going to be a, well, I used to hear people say old maid or spinster, but I made up the word bachelor girl. I was going to be a bachelor girl. I was going to do everything that I wanted to do. And I was going to travel. And I was going to make money. And summertime, I was going to go to Europe and see all these places. Well, that was part of my art. Uh-huh. You know, all these artistic places that they talk about. So we had art appreciation. You talked about these pyramids and the Hanging Garden in Babylon and stuff like that. You know, I was going to go see all these places. So I guess that's where the being in the army changed. All my dreams just kind of went down, you know. But it's kind of funny now. We talk about the sexism and racism, but that sexism I always think about, you know. It seemed to me that that's what changed my whole life, you know. Because I used to date a lot of guys, and well, even, like, there were a lot of Indian boys that knew me, and in fact, you know, a lot of them used to think, you know, gee, you know, we could get married and have a nice life, you know. You know, you got an education, and you know, I do too, so we'll, you know. And I said, well, that sounds nice, but maybe in a couple of years, I would say, you know. And I don't think I really regret it, you know, that. And by the time I got around to thinking about it, they had married somebody else. But I guess I never really was that crazy about this because it didn't bother me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did the army change it then? What, where did you change?
Well, it's like I met my husband. And like I always tell my daughters, you know, I said, I don't know what there was about your dad, but I said, he sure ruined my whole life. And my daughter always says, because he's Italian, he talks a lot, you know. They always say, she said, you must have believed that they say Italians are great lovers. And, you know, I never heard that until after I was married to him. I said, somebody asked me if it was true, and I said, I never heard that expression before, you know. So I said, well, how would I know?
No comment.
So in a way, it seemed like my whole life just changed. Here I got the service, and then the kids started coming along, you know, one little baby, and then before I knew it, I had 2 or 3, and it seemed like that's all I had time for was just keeping house and taking care of these little ones and cooking and all the stuff, you know.
All the things you never wanted to do.
Yeah, all the things that I didn't really think they were so bad, but I didn't think that there was so much to do as well. But then I don't know, it was like playing house, I guess, at first, because I found so many things to do, and I was always thinking of some new way to do something easier.
Well, listen, before we get into that, I also kind of wanted to know about, I sort of also want to know more about, like, your life living in the barracks and your relationships with the women that were also in the barracks and what kind of friendships you made or how close were people to one another.
Well, the whole thing about it was, see, we all, like, we were all in companies and, like, I have a picture at home of my company. It's this one regiment, they called it, and there were about 30 girls. So ever, you know, like we all stayed, lived in the barracks, and we had beds, you know, like in the dormitories, little cots, like, and we each had a little footlocker where we kept our stuff. And in this way, I think we all got to know one another real good. And before you knew it, we were just like one big family.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't, you know, if someone had told me that couldn't have happened, I guess I wouldn't. Because at the time, it never entered my mind that some of them could be prejudiced, because there were only two of us Indian girls in that outfit. One was a little Navajo girl, Peggy and I. But we never, because she was a cook, and she had odd hours, you know, so I didn't get to see much of her half the time, you know. But I used to run around with, I guess one of my real close friends was the girl that had the bed next to me. She was from Milwaukee, but she was a Czechoslovakian girl, and her mother, they owned a bakery in Milwaukee, and well, she said her mother was a widow, and she just had these two kids and her two daughters. So her mother used to make the best pastries, you know, Czechoslovakian cookies and all kinds of fancy things. You know. They just melt in your mouth. And so she was always sending her packages with all these goodies. So she found out that I really liked her, so she, every time she got a package, she'd call me in there, you know, and we'd sit there eating away. But she and it's still several of them in the barracks there that I got real, you know, close to. And I guess we more or less all shared our problems. If one of us got in some trouble, we needed money or something, it seemed like there was always somebody in that outfit that would come up with something, you know, to help. And I don't know, that's why when I got out, it was a weird feeling, like I was lost again.
Yeah, being away from close friends and time.
Yeah, it just being so, just the outside world was seemed like we were just so close knit there. And we, when I got out, you know, I was thinking about that the other day. I was talking to a fellow that just got out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't think he could cope with the society on the outside. And I got to thinking about that, and I thought, well, I've never been in prison, but, you know, it's in the same circumstances.
Yeah.
And it seemed like I could feel just how he felt. Everything seemed so strange to me after I got out, you know. Like I was walking down the street in San Francisco, and a car backfired, you know, and I think I jumped about 2 feet out of the hospital.
Mm.
It just, you know, I thought, like I used to, while I was overseas, I used to hear these big guns, you know, going off. You know, it got so, it didn't even bother me, you know, and I could sleep. But here, you know, I'm walking down the street and I hear this, and I don't know, my whole, I just kind of, it just, I went kind of cold, like, you know.
Mm.
It was a funny scene. And it took me a while to really get used to, well, being a civilian again. I was always referring to something. And then it was kind of a disappointment because I'd have to tell myself, you know, I'm not in the service anymore on the outside now.
Did you miss it?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
At first, you know, when you go in, you think, you know, but after you've been in there and you meet all these kids and you get so close together, well, there really isn't anything else, you know, and it sort of becomes your life. And so when you get out, you have to readjust again to something different.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then your family, I think it's like my mother and them, they were so happy, you know. My dad wrote and he says, come home, my girl. He says, you know, he said, it's all over with now, you come home. So then I had told them that I was married and I was expecting a baby. Well, then they told me come on home and bring our son-in-law home. And we want to see our grandchild. And I thought about it. And so my husband, he was still in the Navy then, you know. So he told me, he says, well, why don't you go and visit them? He said, you can always come back. So one evening there, I was sitting there and I thought, well, maybe I'll take off. So I packed a suitcase and got on the plane and went up there. I was going to stay there for about 2-3 weeks. By the end of 1 week, I was ready to go on a go again. It was, I didn't know, I was happy to see my folks and my sisters and everything. But they seemed so different. I think I was the one that changed, but at the time I thought it was them, you know.
How do you think you had changed?
Well, I don't know. I think about it a lot of times, but I don't know what it was. There was sort of a barrier. I think because they thought I'd been out and that I didn't approve of a lot of the things that was our life, you know, that I had changed from into the white society, as they say. So that's where they were kind of afraid to really open up to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was expecting that, you know, that they would be, you know, like nothing had happened, but they were sort of on guard, and I guess I was too, you know.
Did you feel like you changed? Did you feel like you had become more white or had been?
No, I always had the feeling that, sure, you know, but I learned to live in two different cultural, you know, aspects. I didn't, that's what I told myself, that I go back there, I can go back just, you know, the way I used to be and, you know, talk my language and be myself, you know. But then I can come back out here and live up to this society's standards and their values. And
that'd be hard to do, though, just to maintain that.
Well, I think I've done a pretty good job of it. At first, it just seemed like it was a hopeless case. And for a while there, I think, too, I didn't want to go back because of that. You know, I thought I had become too much assimilated, we call it. Oh, one of the things, too, I guess, it's at first was that I missed the modern conveniences of having electricity and running water.
Oh, when you went back to visit?
Yeah, and I couldn't get over that, you know. But now I can go back and it doesn't bother me because I know it. That's the way we were raised, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I feel so?
Yeah.
You know, and then I think with all this energy crisis and everything, we may have to go back to living in the desert.
I think you've got that experience. Did you keep in contact with any of your women friends after you got out of service?
Oh, yeah, I still have two or three that I write to all of them. I don't know, sometimes I think that they've forgotten, but we don't write quite often. Like me, I don't like to write anymore because I get tired of writing. And if I do write, I try to put it away, but come Christmas time or something, I'll get a Christmas card and there'll be a letter. It's not just a card, there'll be a letter with it. Through the whole year, maybe I haven't heard from them, and they'll just have 3 or 4 pages of, you know. So then I have to sit down and answer, if you know. Then I send them a New Year's card with my letter. And like I have this one in New York City, I've never seen her since the last time I saw her in 1945. And she got the service and went back. she got married. Well, she's been married twice now. She's never had any children. Mm-hmm. And she's the one that was a fashion editor for the Harper's Bazaar magazine. She's retired now. She's raising two of her sister's children now. Oh, they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. But she sends me pictures of them, like they're her children, you know. And she asks for pictures of my kids, and what are they doing? And see, she's never seen them, but I guess she feels like she knows my kids.
Oh, yeah.
Like she'll write and ask about one of my daughters and, or one of my grandchildren. And,
well, just sharing those experiences you have.
And she thinks it's so, it's just fantastic that I got to stay out here in California.
Did any of them stay in the service?
Not the ones that I knew. They all wanted to get out.
Yeah. So they all just left after the war? That was basically the feeling of most of the women?
Yeah.
That they wouldn't, like when you went in, did you expect to stay in more than women with the war?
No, we all went in just for the duration of the war, I think. We never, we didn't think of it as a career, you know. And I guess they told them that when they were going to get out, you know. Because I know they told me that if I wanted to stay in, I could put in my 20 years and I could have all these benefits. And I thought, I'd been in there 3.5 years, and I thought, that's long enough. I couldn't see myself, you know, the same thing, and I thought, oh, I don't know. And when you're young like that, you don't stop and think about the future. Now I wish maybe I'd stayed in longer. I could have had some good benefits, you know.
I was sort of curious about, like, what did you look like then? What were the fashions? What your uniform was like? Did you have a lot of different ones? Did you have to maintain
it?
It
was the same. We had two uniforms. Well, we were issued 4 altogether, and 2 were for summertime. They used to call them suntans, and they were made out of this like gabardine, you know, and they were just a white tan. You had the skirt and the like a jacket, well, they call it a blouse, you know, a dress tan, they call it. And the winter were made out of wool, and they were that olive drab. They're just like the soldiers, you know. The only difference is we had a skirt instead of a pants, you know, like they had. And then, well, around the barracks when we worked and we wore the fatigues, we had green and white striped seersucker dresses.
Yeah.
And we had black and white gym outfits for calisthenics and all that, white tennis.
Did you have to maintain all the upkeep on all these? You see, you roll your eyes.
Yeah, we have to. It was a kind of a joke because that when my kids were going to school, we were living in East LA, you know, and they were going to this little school there. And my son came home, he was crying, you know. He was only about 5 years old. So I said, what happened to him, you know? So one of his sisters, you know, because they were all older, the youngest one, that's Laura, and she says, and she was around 7 years old, she says, some of the kids were teasing him. And she says, I told them not to tease him, but they kept on, she said. So she said, I was going to slug one of them. She said, oh, no. I said, don't do that. I said, what happened? I said, what did they say to him? I said, they didn't hit him, did they? And she says, no. But she said, they were saying, your mama wears combat boots. You know? So I said, well, why did you tell them that? I did. How did they know? And he stopped crying and looked at me. He says, you did, Mama? I said, yeah, I said they issued us combat boots. But that was so funny.
You really gave them a whole different view of it.
I know, because I guess those little kids thought, it never entered their minds that women were in the street.
Oh, really?
And they thought that was something awful to say about a woman.
Oh no.
But there's, you know, a lot of humorous things like that come up, you know,
that brings you back to it.
Did your feelings about war change after having been in it?
Mm-hmm. That's why, like, I never tried to talk my boys into going into the service. My youngest son, the one that's 22, when he first graduated from high school, he wanted to go into the Marines. And he was 17, see, and he contacted, I guess he sent him something while he was getting these calls from sergeants, somebody, you know, that if you're still interested in all this, you know, sending him all kinds of brochures about what he could get into and all that. So he finally came out and told him. He told me, he said, do you think you and Dad would sign if I went to the Marines? Mm. And I just looked at him and I said, it's up to your dad. So my husband, he says, we'd never really told the kids that we didn't want them to do something that was for their own good. He said, but he said, that's what he wants. He said, there's no way we can stop him. So that's when I sat down and I talked to him and I told him about what I had gone through and what World War II was like. And I said, you go in, and I said, they're going to send you to Vietnam. And I said, that's a war. I don't even think it's a war. I said, we have no business being over there. I said, that's their problem. And I said, if we were at war because somebody attacked the United States, well, this is the feeling I have, that my boys would be one of the first ones, if they wanted to go, I would say, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that they were fighting for this country. But the Vietnam War, I didn't think was none of our business.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought it over, I guess, and I told him, I said, it's okay with me. You still want to go in? And I said, maybe it'll be a good thing for you, if that's what you want. So that, he said, well, I'll wait till in the fall. He said, I'll make up my mind. So come fall, he came and told me, he said, I signed up to go to UCLA. Oh, I was so happy.
Oh, what an amazing thing.
So your attitude had changed from, like, what was it before you went in the war, and then the difference after you came?
Well, I guess when you're young, you think everything's exciting, everything's an adventure. At the time, I don't really think that I went in because I was being real patriotic. It was just a way to get away from home and a way to see the country and see what was going on out there, you know. And I thought, oh, it was really something, you know. And then, see, when I went back home on a furlough, like all Indians on the reservations, they just sort of, you know, oh, Christine, you know. And I was one of the first Indian girls in the army, you know. And I thought, oh, this is, you know, I'm really somebody, you know. But at the time, I guess it's because I was young and foolish. I had to do it all over again. I don't think I would. I don't regret it, but it's, I would have stayed as far away from it. I think I would have gone into one of those, what they used to call defense plants, made a lot of money, like my girlfriend said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. The women that were involved in that, but then after the war, they losing their jobs as soon as they did, and being sent back to work in the home, and you would have had to contend with that feeling too. where at least you could sort of, it seems more like you made the choice more than you weren't really pushed into, you know, being out of a job or being out of work or, I don't know, do you feel that way?
Yeah, I guess I never felt like I was pushed into it because it was more of a, it was what I went into myself, you know. Nobody told me, you know, that,
yeah.
Not to or whether, you know, so. In fact, I don't think my parents wanted me to get married because they had never met my husband until after.
Okay.
After we had a couple of kids or something. And I know one of my uncles was kind of, he was, I used to be his favorite. And I thought he would be so happy. But, I don't know, he came out with a remark. And after that, I never would talk to him. Because he said something like, why in the hell did you have to marry a German? Because he had fought in the World War One and Two, and he'd been in France and Germany. And I don't know, it took him a long time before he finally came around. By then, it didn't bother me. I don't think it bothered my husband. Because we always said, well, we're living our life, you know. If they don't like it, well, you know, they don't have to contend with us, you know.
Yeah.